This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to iFanboys Talksplode with Tom Scioli.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the Isle of Man. The kids would all sing, he would take the wrong key. So they rode on his head in their...
Hey, this is Josh Flanagan with iFanboy, and this is another episode of Talksplode, our creator interview podcast. Tom Scioli is my guest today. He, as a style, is closely related with Jack Kirby, and then he went and made it official by producing Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics, which is a comic book biography of the great one, the King, Jack Kirby. I talked to Tom today about Kirby and his career in making comics, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hey, this is Josh Flanagan with Tom Scioli. I think I got that right.
Sounds good.
Oh, thank goodness. Now, I have known your work for some time. I think the first time I ever saw it was with Joe Casey on Godland. But take me back. I can tell by your voice you're from the Philadelphia area. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Are you as well? Or
no.
No dialect.
No, I just, yeah. I've just been watching Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Mayor of Easttown. So I was like, all right, it's been foremost on my mind a little bit, I guess. So I noticed it. You know, have you always been a comics kid? How did you sort of decide this is going to be a thing I want to do with my life?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been like a superhero kid, like, you know, just as far back as I can remember. And then the comics came a little bit later. I mean, you know, I was into comics, you know, all my life, basically. But, you know, they were just kind of like one of like a million different kid interests, you know, the stuff you're into when you're a kid. And, you know, but I got a little more serious about them when I got a little older, when, you know, maybe like seventh grade or something.
Mm-hmm. I think if Wikipedia is correct, we're about the same age. So, yeah. You know, there were the superheroes, and then did you start reading comics like later and sort of start to dig the art form or the, you know, the storytelling?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I always wanted to draw. Like, yeah. I was always interested in drawing and art and storytelling. Just, you know, comics wasn't, you know, like I, you know, was thinking, you know, animation, mm-hmm. film, things like that, you know, but actually making comics came a little bit later. Again, maybe around seventh grade, maybe around the, you know, my, like getting interested. And it was kind of like comics was having kind of a renaissance then. You know, they were just kind of everywhere and they were kind of cool.
This is sort of Image Boom, Death of Superman time.
Like right before that.
Right.
You know, like the Image guys, but before they went to Image.
Right. Okay.
Basically.
Yeah, I think that's sort of my first, around the first time that I sort of started reading seriously, whatever that means. So from being a fan into that, and your drawing, you know, had you planned to sort of work in comics early on?
That was a plan. I mean, again, it was like, you know, maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do that, and comics was in there, but it wasn't like the top one, or you know, I was, maybe I'll make video games, mm-hmm. you know, just you know, something creative. But it is kind of weird that comics wasn't like my go-to thing, because it's like, yeah, if you draw, if you're into, you know, like sci-fi and superheroes and fantasy and that kind of stuff, like comics is a pretty natural one. But I don't know why it took a while. I mean, I think part of it is like comics just seem, first of all, it did, like, I understood that like movies were made by people and TV shows were made by people, but comics I didn't connect with that idea that like somebody made this stuff. You know, I'd look at like the little dots, mm-hmm. and it just seemed like this like very, you know, technical, you know, machine process, and then just printing, like just, you know, engraving, you know, these like hard black lines, like, I didn't see the human hand, which again, that's kind of odd from my perspective now, because yeah. comics is one of the most, one of the art forms where like you most see the human hand and, yeah. and the voice of the artist.
That's really interesting, because and I do want to get to it, but you know, if you're the expert of the moment on somebody like Jack Kirby and sort of that hands-on style, I have always thought that is that like the best part about comics is that brush stroke, that pencil mark, that, you know, hand lettering, you know, something like that, where you can see, oh, somebody touched this, and I've always yeah. been attracted to that, even the more I became aware of it, I guess.
Yeah, it's just, I guess it's just the, you know, the kind of ideas that like a kid forms, and so mm-hmm. just, it really was like just like focusing on those tiny dots. It's like, how would a person do that, you know? I could make a picture with watercolor, but it wouldn't be little tiny dots, and it wouldn't be hard black lines, you know, it took me a while to get that.
So you had, I mean, when did you start making comics that, you know, I'm doing something I want people to read?
College.
Yeah.
I dabbled a little bit, like maybe like ninth grade, like, you know, like I tried to make some comics, and I, you know, gave it a shot, made like a couple comics, and then didn't try again until college.
Mm-hmm. So what made it sort of come along? Did you leave comics and come back, or read, or did you have like a beginning?
Yeah. I think it was, you know, pretty typical, like when you're like, you know, 13 or whatever, you know, you kind of like reach your height with comics. And then around 14 or 15, you kind of like, you know, drop a lot of the stuff you were into when you were a kid and you know, kind of, you know, get, you know, become a little more, you know, trying to be a grown up, you know.
and you, I mean, at some point you did a graphic novel, you ended up with a Xeric grant, you know, like what yeah. led to that? Was that intentional, or was that like, well, like yeah, this is the thing I'm going to do?
By that point, comics had become my chosen thing. Like I was in college, I was doing animation, you know, computer animation, hand drawn animation. And I was, you know, trying my hand at comics, and, you know, there were a couple other guys I was friends with who were like, kind of like further along, mm-hmm. they were a little bit older, and they kind of showed me how to make a comic, like how to, you know, take all these pages and put them together and Xerox them and, you know, things like that. And so, you know, I just found myself, you know, after kind of gravitating more and more towards comics, and just the immediacy of it, just how, you know, the efficiency, how much more I could accomplish story-wise, you know, compared to animation and then it just, you know, I guess kind of like, you know, like a tipping point or whatever. I was gravitating more and more and more towards comics, and then boom, you know, comics was everything. Mm-hmm. And so like I was doing, it was like a, a zine, like a comic zine called Codex Pop. And I was, you know, doing it with like a couple other guys. And then, you know, I just kept going with that. And then, you know, different stories that I was doing in there eventually became my submission for the Zurich grant. And then once I got the Zurich grant, like I was in the comics business. I was, you know, I was, you know, had my listing in Diamond and was, you know, getting books printed by the same printer that, you know, Cerebus was printed with, and they were going out to shops and, you know, I was on my way.
Did you think you had a shot at the Zurich? Were you surprised when you got it, or?
I wasn't surprised. Like I, you know, like it's just kind of like that youthful, optimism or cluelessness or whatever. Like I just kind of like, I knew it was hard and it was a lot of, it was very labor intensive. But you know, when I got it, like I only realize now, how hard that is. And just like, I know people who tried for years to get the Zurich grant and never did. And so I did, like, I didn't realize, you know, that, you know, how hard it was. So, I mean, I was super grateful and I recognized it for the, you know, big opportunity that it was, but yeah, I just thought the world in general was easier back then. Like now I know just how hard every little bit of life is.
That's absolutely the case. And that was a different, I mean, it seems like, so that's 99. And, you know, the world was about to change entirely after that.
Yeah,
so.
No kidding. Yeah, no kidding. It's, you know, the past is a foreign country or whatever the saying is. It's like, yeah, like that world's unrecognizable.
Well, it's interesting that you said, like, we did a zine, and that is such a thing of that time. I mean, zines must have, you know, they don't exist in that form like they did then. But then, you know, when you're talking about mini comics and putting things together, you know, you're talking about paper. You are talking about, you know, really having your hands on things, which is obviously related to the thing we were just talking about, comics. It's kind of interesting.
I mean, zines have had a comeback, and I think part of it is nostalgia and,
sure,
and people kind of fascinated with that era. you know, so I mean, they have come back around, but yet, like, because, like, just, it took me a while to realize how much things had changed too, because I was still operating that same way. I was still operating with the idea that, like, you know, this print version is the focus, and that, color is prohibitively expensive, so I should only work in black and white, you know, things like that. And then, you know, I just kind of had the realization, you know, pretty late that, like, oh, I could do web comics and they'd be in full color, and, you know, they'd be, you know, accessible, you know, globally. And, you know, like it took me a minute to adjust to, like, you know, how quickly the world had changed.
Do you think that sort of the limitations of that form, you know, that pre-digital form, do you think that helped you?
I mean, you just kind of figure your way out, you know, figure out things just in like the world you find yourself in. Uh-huh. So I probably have certain skills that, you know, maybe, you know, my equivalent who was maybe born, you know, 10 years later or 20 years later or whatever might not have, you know, like I had to learn how to make a crisp black and white image. I had to learn how to ink, how to, you know, hand letter, how to swing a brush. And, those aren't really necessary skills anymore. You know, I mean, people still, you know, again, just like zines, people are still into those things and practice them and learn them. But I mean, it was like those were just the necessary skill sets you had to have.
Now it's an artisanal skill set. It's a whole.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You got it.
So given that, like, what kind of career did you want to have in comics? How did you envision it? What was your goal at that point?
You know, it was really, like when I did, Transformers versus G.I. Joe, like that sort of thing, like not that specific thing, but that sort of thing was my goal. Like that was my dream, was that somebody at some company, whether it was like Marvel or DC or Dark Horse, like I didn't even have that sort of like Image Comics dream.
Right.
It was like I had the, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't want, I, you know, just that, that, you know, comics pro dream or whatever, like, of like, okay, somebody's going to tell me like, okay, you're the guy who draws Spider-Man now, or you're the guy who draws Batman, or you're the guy who draws New Gods, or like somebody's going to say, okay, you're the guy who draws, you know, in this case, Transformers versus G.I. Joe. But like even writing wasn't an ambition. Like I just wanted to draw comics and, you know, writing was something that was just sort of necessary. And then I fell in love with it. And now it's, an inseparable part of my process. But yeah, my dream was just like, okay, you're the guy who draws Transformers now. And, here's a bunch of money. And as soon as you turn in those 20 pages, we're going to send you this money. Like that was the dream. Like that was like, oh my God, I want to do that. You know? And it was years before I did that. Like I did other things that sort of like looking back are, you know, maybe bigger accomplishments even, but like they didn't feel like it was like, oh man, when am I going to get that job where somebody says, you know, I need, you know, these 20 pages by the end of the month. And then, you know, and then here's your dough.
So, you know, at that point that you're working on, say, Godland, and I can get to that more specifically, but so you were thinking this is the step to get to the other thing. Cause it's almost like it's reversed now, or at least right. It exists differently than it used to.
I mean, by the time I was, this is kind of like before Godland, okay. But by the time I was doing Godland, I thought, oh yeah, there's this other business model and I can do, you know, like a comic at Image that I, you know, create or co-create with somebody else. And, you know, and okay, you know, that was, so by then it was like, okay, yeah, this would work too.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to get back to Godland. I'm going to come to it, but, so you're a person who now is largely associated with Jack Kirby and, you know, has been, I mean, you sort of sure. First known for drawing in that style. Okay. When, you know, for a lot of people who are, you know, our age and younger, you know, that's looking backwards and it takes a lot of time for, you know, I find the young people don't tend to like that stuff as much. What is it that drew you to that as a thing? And how early did that happen? Was it immediately like, oh, I really like this old stuff, or did it take you time to be able to appreciate it?
No, I mean, I always like again, like when I was like, you know, seventh grade or whatever, you know, I would just like, I didn't know the name Jack Kirby, or if I did, I just kind of knew it as like, oh yeah, one of those, yeah. You know, Marvel guys or whatever. But I just gravitated towards his work, you know, without really like being aware of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some of, like I was very interested in just old comics period. And so I'd be kind of like, oh, let me find some cool old comics. And the ones that would be like, okay, you know, I have $3 in my pocket. Let me buy this Captain America back issue. This looks super cool. Let me get this. And then I'd get it and be like, oh, wow, this is super cool. I love this. And then, it, you know, so it was, you know, like that.
Was it the aesthetic of the thing? Was it sort of just the way it looked or felt, or the fact that it didn't look like new comics?
Yeah, the aesthetic. And yeah, the fact that it didn't look like new comics. It looked really good and really cool, but it did not look like it was from this era. And then I really liked the stories. Like I, uh-huh. You know, I, you know, it was giving me what I wanted. Like I wanted sort of high adventure, sci-fi, superhero-y kind of stuff, you know, told really well with a lot of style. It was, you know, and it coming from, you know, growing up on like Super Friends and like the Superman TV show and stuff like that. Like this was like, you know, a couple cuts above, like this stuff's, you know, pretty sophisticated compared to, you know, the sort of superhero stuff you would see on TV.
Did you start to wrap your head around what it was about the craft of that time that really attracted you to it? Like, I know at the time, maybe you didn't understand, but if you look at it right. Now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. As I like, and when I got into college and stuff, that's when I kind of learned about Jack Kirby and, right. And how important he, and like put two and two together and was like, oh yeah, all those comics I have that I love, all those old Marvel comics, those are Jack Kirby comics. Okay. You know? But yeah, I mean, you know, I really feel like it was more the story and the story and the storytelling more so than the aesthetics. Mm-hmm. When I finally saw his like New Gods work and like his, you know, inked by Mike Royer stuff,
yeah,
that was when the aesthetics, you know, kind of like really clicked in, where it was like, okay, I like this aesthetic a lot, you know.
Well, I think what's really interesting about that is that when you're a kid or you're not thinking about it, and I would say I came to Kirby later, was aware of him, wasn't really able to appreciate it until later, and so I saw it as a whole, is that the aesthetic and the story and the storytelling, you know, with him was all the same. It was a part and parcel. Like he said, here's this thing. And it's really interesting to see, you know, early on you're looking at it, you can't quite put your finger on it. And then afterwards you're like, oh, it's the whole thing. It's the sort of totality of Kirby. And now as we start to understand what things were actually like and how much more of it he had a hand in than say the other names on the cover, I just find that fascinating that, you know, like over time, the more you get into comics, the better all that stuff gets. You know, you can just appreciate it to endless levels, I've found for myself.
Oh, yeah. 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 My appreciation of it, like, just deepens with each passing year.
So did you, I mean, was that, did that sort of style what you sort of grew up learning how to draw, like, or did you have to sort of say, oh, I want to draw in sort of a more Kirby style, or is that just how you drew because that's what you were into?
No, I mean, I was into, like, the Kirby stuff were like a couple standouts in my comics collection, but no, my drawing style was, you know, my sort of natural drawing style was a lot more you know, typical of my generation and my age. You know, there was like Dungeons and Dragons influences, you know, like that aesthetic, and you know, kind of like I don't know what you'd call, like, the graffiti aesthetic or something, you know, where you draw like the guy with like his nose sticking over a wall you know, like that that kind of stuff, and then maybe like a little bit of goth. And then just like, you know, attempts at drawing, you know, realistically and with, you know, delicate strokes. The Kirby thing was a, you know, very deliberate, very conscious, almost like an art project kind of, you know, like when I'm in college and I'm taking art classes and kind of, you know, being more like analytical and you know, just like, oh, this would be an interesting mode to work in.
Was it hard to, like, did you have to really concentrate? You know, the way that I think about it is like an accent. Like, some people can pick an accent and just talk like that, you know, and other people have to really think about every word. Like, after a bit, can you just say, I'm drawn like this?
Yeah, I mean, it was super hard at first. You know, like, it happened in stages. I got, like, I got better and better at it. You know, the like, more, you know, sort of awkward stages of it just, you know, never saw print. I mean, you know, by the time I was, you know, printing my work, it was fairly close. Like, it still had a way to go, but yeah, no, it was awkward and difficult, but it was really fun. It was like playing a character or putting on a costume, and it felt very, different from me. Like, it felt like,
really?
Oh yeah. Like it's like, okay, I'm doing something that is like so, you know, out of my wheelhouse and does not play to my strengths. Because I mean, like my strengths were sort of like a delicate tonal drawing. It wasn't, you know, bold, heavy impact, you know, big, you know, grandiose. It was, you know, kind of, delicate.
So do you think, I mean, it sounds like you know, learn from, you know, it's like, yeah. Did that give you to be able to draw like that? Like, what did you take from it that sort of for that affected your sort of overall drawing style?
Yeah. I mean, just, like learning to draw fast, you know, learning to exaggerate, draw for impact, you know, fake perspective, like learning how to sort of like intuit perspective and just, you know, just sort of trust, you know, where your pencil's going and yeah, make bold moves and be okay with being idiosyncratic. You know, my natural way was to kind of like, Like not make any bold statement, you know, make just very, pretty, naturalistic drawings that were as sort of like inoffensive as possible. Like, mm-hmm. like the Kirby style is offensive. Like it does make bold moves and it takes chances and it dares you not to like it. And that was just, you know, like I was, you know, I was a kid, you know, I wasn't ready for that.
That's really interesting. So do you think that, I mean, so many people, at least for a time, say with Godland or something like that, like they thought that's what you're doing. That's your thing, but it was more intentional than that.
By the time I did Godland, it was like Body Snatchers or some kind of like body horror or something, because I was transforming into that. Like it began as this like, you know, little project, this fun little thing. And then it was like, oh yeah, this is how I draw now. And this is how I think now. And I mean, I was still, putting coal, into the furnace. Like I was still, you know, nursing that, like really like, okay, you know, how can I draw even more like Kirby? You know, like I was still feeding it, but it was becoming like, you know, it's like, okay, do I even still remember how to draw in a non-Kirby style?
Did you worry that was going to pigeonhole yourself, or was it?
I wasn't worried about that. I should have been. I wasn't worried about that because I thought, like when I, you know, whenever I didn't like achieve what I wanted to achieve, you know, like career wise or whatever, like I just assumed it's because my Kirby imitation isn't good enough. Like it's not Kirby enough. And if I just turn up the Kirby, then eventually everything will click, you know, like
I think you're giving editors too much credit to be able to read that.
Right.
So how did Godland come about? Did you know Joe?
I didn't know Joe. Eric Larson put me in touch with Joe. I had been talking to Eric Larson for a while about bringing my Myth of Eight Opus comic to Image, and he was super helpful.
He was like publisher then, yeah.
It was like before he was publisher. Okay. It was when Jim Valentino was publisher, and he's kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, this is how, you know, let's try to get Eight Opus in the kind of shape where, you know, Jim Valentino is going to say yes to it, you know, but more importantly, the shape where it's like, you know, like it's like an Image book, you know, it's, you know, like make the best possible version of this. And so like we were doing that for a while and it kind of nothing ever came of that. And then when he became publisher, he kind of had this idea that they hadn't done at Image before. He had this idea of like, hey, I know a lot of writers, I know a lot of artists, I know, you know,
right,
let me try to find some people who I think would work well together or who have sort of like similar, you know, or sort of coming at me with like similar ideas and see if I can like pair them up. So that was me and Joe Casey, like he paired us up and yeah, we hit it off immediately and you know, in pretty short order came up with Godland.
So it was a collaborative.
Yeah.
Cool concept. That's what, 30 something issues? That's not a bad run.
I think it's like 38 issues. I might be wrong, but I think it's like 30. It's the longest. It's the longest thing I ever worked on, you know, I spent years on it and I don't think anything I've done has that page count. I mean, maybe no, I don't. Yeah. Not even Eight Opus, like Eight Opus, it ended up being like six trades, mm-hmm. you know. It was an epic. It was, you know, it was huge. It was a lot, you know, it's hard for me to imagine doing that again. Like it
really,
it was really, it was a marathon. Like, and it by the end, I was all tapped out. I was like, oh, you know, like. I get maybe it would be different now. Like I kind of, you know, have just like, you know, all this kind of, like, you know, just like years under my belt now, where maybe it would be different now, but then it was like, okay, you know, let me try something else. Like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, were you working on, because it was a relatively long time, were you working on it mostly exclusively or coming back in and out probably more towards the end?
Yeah. I mean, I had a day job. So,
right.
So, you know, like I'd work on other things on the side. Like I would, like I'd work on Godland and then occasionally put out like an 8 opus, original graphic novel or something. And I did a little bit of work on like American Barbarian around that time, you know, but no, that was pretty much it. That was my job in comics was Godland.
And how do you go from that into doing, you know, licensed comics, albeit stylistic ones, over with IDW, or was it GoBots first, then Transformers later, right?
Is that... No, it was Transformers first. That was just like, I was like, okay, I did Godland and now I want to make, you know, like, I'm just like, okay, I guess I never got the chance to make like a corporate comic and yeah, it's like, you know, who needs it anyway? Like, yeah, let me, you know, and so I'll just do my original stuff. And so then I did, American Barbarian and that went well. And then, like every comic that I did after every one of my original things, I just, you know, wasn't having any success, you know, finding a home for any of it. I did Final Frontier, which I was, you know, extremely proud of. And I just, yeah, couldn't find anybody to publish that. And then, I did like a couple other things and then I did Satan Soldier. And I thought like, okay, this is really something. Like I was incredibly proud of, I felt like it was a breakthrough, like a creative breakthrough and like a, just like a breakthrough for comics in general. And I couldn't get anybody to publish that either. So it was just, I just kind of threw my hands in the air. I'm like, okay, I guess this whole thing, you know, it's just not working. So let me just, you know, try to get a job in comics, like the way people get, like, you know, enough of this, like, you know, auteur nonsense. Let me just, you know, like do it the way everybody else does. And so I'm like, okay, let me submit, you know, my portfolio or whatever, you know? So I just kind of looked at all the companies, their submission guidelines and blah, blah, blah. And, a lot of companies were like, oh yeah, we don't take submissions and stuff. And then I saw like IDW, it's like, here's their submission guidelines. So I followed their submission guidelines. And then I heard from John Barber. And then, you know, I did like a couple covers for things. And then he, you know, hit me with the, you know, Transformers and do you want to do a Transformers and G.I. Joe crossover in a Jack Kirby style, where the G.I. Joe team goes to Cybertron, you know? And I was like, yes, yeah, that's, you know, pretty much what I've been waiting for my whole life. Like I never would have thought.
You really got that through just a submission.
Yeah, it was just because
that, you know, doesn't happen all that often.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's just because, you know, like I wasn't, you know, like a 19-year-old.
You weren't nobody, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like I had a pretty full body of work. I'd kind of like skipped that phase, you know, and just went straight to like, you know, doing my own stuff. And then, and he was, you know, a fan of my work. He was a fan of, yeah, 8 Opus and also like, so yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't like you knew the, I mean, he knew the work, but it wasn't, you know, still from out of nowhere. So that's not nothing. There's a lot of people like that didn't work for me.
Yeah. And I don't even know that door is open anymore. Like that was like this very brief window where they had kind of like a submission policy where, yeah, it was like, you know, just send it to this, the IDW chat room or whatever, you know, the IDW forum or whatever. Like, I think that ended, you know, pretty shortly after, you know, I got in through it, which again, like that's the cliche about comics is like, whenever somebody breaks into comics, they close that window.
There's only like 8 guys in comics now, as far as I understand. So given that you're doing that kind of stuff. So how do we get to the point where you say, I want to do a biocomic of Jack Kirby?
Yeah, it was, I mean, again, it was, you know, it's kind of like all these sort of like breakthroughs that I have and just are kind of, you know, are the result of like just hitting like a dead end or, you know, like of what I, because it was like, I did Transformers versus G.I. Joe and I was incredibly proud of it. Like it turned out so much better than I could have imagined. And I thought like, oh, well, this is going to open doors. Like, you know, Marvel and DC are going to be like, oh, can you do, you know, your version of that for us? You know, like, it, you know, like, can you do, you know, Fantastic Four or you know, Avengers or, you know, Superman or whatever, you know, like you did with the Transformers and G.I. Joe. And then like that just never happened. And it was kind of like, you know, like it was like, oh, like I didn't think I'd be like out of a job by the time I finished. And while I was working on Transformers versus G.I. Joe, I, you know, got job offers that I turned down because I just didn't have the chance. And then, you know, and then it's like those job offers just weren't there, right. You know, for whatever reason when I was done. And so it was kind of like, okay, what now, you know? And
this
so
this is why it's hard to be a writer and an artist at the same time.
Sure. Yeah. Because you, like, it's like, you know, they got to sign off on your art and your writing.
Yeah.
They, you know, but yeah, so it was kind of like, okay, what do I do now? So I'm, you know, just, you know, try to, again, tried a few different projects, this and that. And it was different than when I was doing like, Final Frontier and Satan Soldier, because I started working on other projects and I was, you know, getting interest and, you know, companies that were like willing to publish them and things like that. It was just like, you know, I don't know if the, you know, just trying to find the right fit and the right deal or whatever. But yeah, I was just kind of like whatever comic I was working on, I would post online, post on Instagram or whatever. And the Jack Kirby thing, it was something I'd always wanted to do. Like, you know, pretty much from the time I, you know, like really figured out who Jack Kirby was. It just like my preference is drawing make-believe, you know,
right.
and writing and drawing make-believe. So it was kind of like, you know, oh, well, you know. Maybe somebody else will do that, you know, and then I can read it and be a fan and you know, and then, you know, the years went by and then I think it was like the 100th, Jack Kirby's 100th birthday was coming up. And I was like, wow, nobody has done a Jack Kirby life story graphic novel. And his 100th birthday is coming up. If anybody was going to do it, they'd have it, you know, ready to go by and they're not. So, you know, maybe this is now is the time. Like maybe it's
that's
the time
insane.
To yeah,
that isn't didn't it? It's insane. The more
and
I
you
think
can go
it.
Down, you can go down the list of people you would think of as like, you know, why didn't this guy do it? Why didn't this guy, like? There's a million, you know, big Kirby fans with, you know, deeper pockets than me, or you know, or like, you know, a bigger cachet or whatever. Who like, why didn't they do it? You know, but nobody was doing it. So I'm like, okay, I guess it's on me. I guess I'm going to have to do it. So then I started doing it and, you know, I was posting it, you know, like a page at a time or a couple pages.
So you just started it like on spec as your own.
On spec. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's how I've done most of,
sure.
You know, most of my career is just on spec. It's like, I love to make comics. I'm going to make them whether somebody's paying me to make them or not. You know, I'll make them, you know, till the day I die. You know, it's just like, you know, that's just how it is, you know.
I just think like with the, it's interesting just because with the spec of something like this scope, I mean, you know, it's hard to build a story out of various accounts and sort of coming up with a linear thing,
yeah,
with a somewhat unreliable narrative. I mean, had you been reading like those books all along and
yeah,
you
know? I mean, this is like one subject where it was like ready to go because
right.
I'd been so immersed in Kirby just as like a fan and as somebody who wanted to follow in his footsteps that like I knew all these stories already. Like it was ready to go. It was just a matter of sitting down, figuring out the chronology, you know, just ironing things down. But it was I had this tremendous advantage. I definitely was not going in cold. I have like, you know, a library full of, you know, every imaginable book about Jack Kirby. And
I remember when I read Tales to Astonish by Ronan Roe, that was the one that kind of blew my mind. I went, oh, and it like all came together for me and sort of understanding who this guy was and all of the, you know, brilliant mm-hmm. talent, but also the sort of sadness of like, oh, come on, stand up for yourself. It's
yeah, that's interesting because that like the Ronin Row book that feels relatively late. I mean, I'm sure it was like a million years ago, but it was kind of like
for me, it was like I said, I came to it late.
Yeah, for me, the breakthrough was, like at the local comic store, they had this little like Jack Kirby shelf, and it was like The Art of Jack Kirby by Ray Wyman. And then, you know, like the first issue or the first like two or three issues of the Jack Kirby Collector, you know, like mm-hmm. both of those things were relatively new, and just like looking at those two things together and being like, oh my God, this is Jack Kirby. Wow. Like I knew the name, I knew the style a little bit, but I did not know this about him. Like I saw like, you know, pictures of the New Gods and like, whoa. And I saw like that double page splash of Commandy with the Statue of Liberty, you know, mm-hmm. crumbling in the ocean. Like, you know, I was just kind of blown away. And then that was it, you know.
What was your sort of process for getting started with it? I mean, did you have like an outline of the thing, or were you sort of drawing and going as you went?
Like both. I mean, I had an outline. I kind of, you know, came up with like sort of bullet points. Like, okay, this is like Jack Kirby's story as I know it to be. And I kind of did that. And then I just started drawing. It's like, okay, well, you know, it's going to start with his parents and, you know, he's a little baby or whatever. And
you've got dialogue for all those things that came from, you know, those.
Yeah.
Know.
I mean, I just revised as I went. So like right. I'd have my outline and then I'd start drawing a page and then it's like, oh wait, I don't know what happens here. And then I'd, you know, go look it up. I'd amend the outline, you know, so it was, the outline was sort of growing and refining as I was drawing it. Like I get very impatient and I want to draw. And I also view it as like, okay, if I'm just making these things on spec and I'm just, you know, posting them on Instagram and Twitter and whatever, like I'm free to revise and change. I can throw all this stuff in the garbage and, you know, like this is the rough draft. And if this rough draft ends up being good enough to become the final draft, that's great. But if I have to like redo it, that's fine. That's part of the process.
You're not George Lucas then. It's okay.
Oh no, I am George Lucas.
Right. Well,
George
it's Lucas. True, but, I get it.
I will redo, you know, whatever I have to, I'd rather not read.
The book wasn't out yet. I suppose you didn't go and change it afterwards. Like,
right.
Here's the process and you'll see the finish.
But I'd be open to that too. Like if we did a,
really?
If we did like a second edition or whatever, I'd, you know, there's things I'd like to include and expand on and these are all.
But yeah, when you finished it, did you feel like, were you within, I mean, did you have to cut it down enough? Was there more that you wanted to do? Were you stuck within a specific page limit or something because of the publishing or?
Pretty much. Like my vision for it, my initial vision was that I would, like, it would just be a comic book series. It would come, it would be like, you know, like a 32 page comic, come out like in the form that Jack Kirby worked in, you know, for pretty much all his life. It would be a comic book and it would come out, you know, monthly or bi-monthly or, you know, whenever, but it would come out in issues. So it'd be like, okay, here's his childhood. And it would just keep going and going. And it would just like, you know, Godland or whatever, you know, we'd do like six issues and then collect it in a trade and then do another six issues, collect them in a trade and then take those two trades and collect them in a hard, you know, like, and have it, you know, take, you know, several years and, you know, maybe end up being, you know, like 1,000 pages or whatever. And you'd be, you know, reading a comic, except instead of reading about, you know, Captain America or Spider-Man or whatever, you're reading about Jack Kirby. And like, I couldn't get any publishers to sign it up on that. Like I understood that like a book publisher, like 10 Speed, who was the publisher of the book, I understand they're not looking for that. They're not looking to get into the comic book business. But I thought like, oh, well, maybe, you know, Image or IDW or Dark Horse or something, like they're comic book publishers. Of course they'd want to do it, but none of them wanted to do that. They were all interested in the book, but they wanted to do it, you know, as it ended up being. They were like, no, we'd like, you know, one discrete volume, you know, one, thing. And so it became that. And I mean, I was, happy to do that, but that wasn't my, that wasn't my initial vision for it.
So through this whole thing, you knew a lot about Jack to start with. What do you know about him now? Or what do you think you know? Or what do you understand about him that, after you got to the end of this, that changed from what you thought at the beginning?
Yeah, a big one is, like you were saying about, like, reading the Ronan Roe book and being like, hey, come on, Jack, stand up for yourself, And that was one of the things I learned about him, was that he wasn't, like a rube or something. Like, he wasn't like, oh, gee whiz, like just sitting at his board, drawing and making bad deals and not thinking any better. Like, he, pushed for all kinds of things and fought for all kinds of, and had so many like ups and downs in his career and moments where he was a self-publisher, moments where he was a boss, where he was, had, profit participation. He had all these things, but it's like by the time he's doing Fantastic Four number one, like he'd already been on a roller coaster ride, mm-hmm. And even then, like that Marvel era where we think he's just sort of toiling away like a monk and with no concern towards, I want a better deal. I want, profit participation. Like, he was fighting for those things and he was being, promised those things. And then the promises, fall through or turn out to be lies and things. And he's, stays on the move and keeps looking for the best deal he can get. And like, he was proactive. Mm-hmm. He was smart. He was entrepreneurial. He did fight for himself. He'd been through every imaginable, condition in comics. And this was just the best he could do in this, incredibly hostile, business, this borderline criminal business.
It's interesting because people, sort of look back and he's the canary in the coal mine in a way where, Neil Adams could look back and say, well, we don't want that to happen and then fight for stuff, yeah. But he's in the front. He's taking all of the hits. Mm-hmm. And that it's so like, that's what he did in World War II. That's what he did. Like, it's this punching bag of a person who also happens to be, the greatest genius the industry ever saw. And I don't see it really as a fault with him. It's sad, and sure. It drew him this way a lot. Like, he's just got that sort of wistful, like, oh, well, got to, get back to work. And
time to make the donuts.
Yeah. I mean, I picture him as like a really good dad. Like, that's, mm-hmm. He's like, well, I have to work. He's coming out of the depression. He's doing the thing. And, he didn't have the luxury that people do today to have those things. And it's so sad. It breaks my heart. Like comics.
Yeah. Right. Comics will break your heart. Yeah. It's, you think about the different ways it could have gone. And, if this were a just or fair universe, he'd be the king, he'd be the king of the unit. He'd be, like the Louis B. Mayer of comic books, it's not any of those things, but he, against all odds, created this, incomparable body of work that his name is attached to and that you can't take, there's people who created great things and were never credited, or, he created great things, got credit, maybe wasn't credited as completely or as fairly as he could have been, as early, he did this incredible stuff. He was credited for it. His name was there. He was, paid for it. He had some scary moments financially, like especially, health related, but he did, end up, with, health insurance, just when he really needed it.
Right.
The gods provided or whatever, like he did. He had a beautiful relationship with his wife. He had a great relationship with his kids loved him. You know, maybe, you know, he would have preferred to not have as many hours at the desk, and maybe his kids would have preferred that. But it's not that out of his relationship is not that much out of the ordinary. He still managed to spend a lot of time with his kids. Like, he was still in the house and accessible, and probably as accessible or more accessible than you know, the average dad.
Yeah.
Of that generation. You know, and then and he makes it, you know, through his whole life. You know, like that. And then, you know, his dream was that, oh, you know, if I could, you know, set my kids up, you know, if I could have sort of, you know, generational wealth, you know, so that all these wonderful things I created, my kids could benefit from it, and my grandchildren. And then, you know, eventually that happened too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, there's, you know, sadness and unfairness, you know, when you view his life story, you know, when you sort of compare it to different ways it could have gone. But like, in the scheme of things, it is, you know, it is something to celebrate, and
good life,
a good life. Yeah. And now it might have played out a little differently, because when I was working on this book, his family hadn't, you know, their lawsuit with Marvel was still pending. And the outcome was uncertain. So it's possible that element wouldn't have happened, like might not have happened. Mm-hmm. That he might not have, you know, like his kids might not have gotten that sort of, you know, financial participation in his creations. But before I finished the book, that did happen. And they know that, and that, it, you know, and that changes the book. I don't think it, I don't think that completely, you know, changes the outcome of his life. Like, I don't think it would have gone from a happy ending to a sad ending, but it's definitely like much happier with, mm-hmm. with that.
It's interesting, because when I hear or read people, you know, who knew him or spent time around him, you know, he seemed didn't seem like a bummer of a guy. You know, he like, you know, Evanier, when he talks about him, great guy.
He would be mortified if he thought that people were going around feeling sorry for him or viewing him as some sort of sad sack. He would be mortified and, sure. and, you know, and would, you know, set you straight, you know.
Have you had any contact with any of the Kirby family?
Yeah, just a little. I mean, I sent, you know, I got in touch with as many of them as I could, and had copies of the book sent to them and things. I haven't heard anything back about, you know, the content. You know, I've just, you know, sort of heard back like, oh yeah, thanks for sending, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. But I haven't heard like, oh, I read the book and I loved it, or I read the book and I hated it, or you know, like I haven't heard any of that. But yeah, like I have. You know, had contact with it. Like they are aware of the book and have copies of it.
and they didn't put out a press release. It was like, this is all wrong. So
you're right. Exactly.
The best you can hope for. So what's your take on, Stan's story versus Jack's side of the story? And, you know, I tend to lean towards the fact that, like, and I think you probably, you know, Jack doesn't get nearly as much credit as he should, and Stan gets way too much, but still they both had to be part of it to accomplish all that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds about right. I mean, yeah, like as like the author of this book, I work very hard to be, you know, as fair as possible mm-hmm. to both sides and make, you know, consider certain things. But yeah, like, I didn't make, you know, Stan Lee, the epic life of the King of Comics, you know, like I, you know, yeah. like that, you know, and, you know, like I view Kirby as the, dominant, creative force behind, just about everything he worked on.
Yeah. when I talk to people who don't know this stuff, and I'll mention Kirby and they don't know him, I was like, you know, he's Elvis and the Beatles and all these, and he's everywhere around you and you have no idea.
Yeah, it is. It's almost a culture clash. I mean, I was much more accustomed to those kind of conversations, you know, in the 90s and, you know, in the early 2000s, like, because like, yeah, how would you know about Jack Kirby? Like, of course you only know Stan Lee, but I mean, that's changed a lot since then. You know, I meet a lot more people who are conversant in, you know, Jack Kirby, you know, Jack Kirby's role in comics. But yeah, like it is jarring and it is and frustrating if I talk to somebody who is, you know, clued in to Kirby, you know, like we have a much better chance of hitting it off. And if you, you know, you sort of come at me with a lot of Stan Lee stuff, you know, it's not the best foot to start off on.
Stan, I just started reading the newest book that, the
Abraham Reisman's book.
Yeah. I'm not too far into it, but he's got a point of view, obviously, from the beginning. It's interesting because when we were doing our video show years ago, one day, you know, we got an invitation to go interview Stan in his office. This is like 2008. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. It was He was all of the things that you think he's going to be and more. And I've been in the room with
delightful.
Him.
Delightful. Yeah,
he's delightful. The warmest, most delightful person. And it was... He made you feel like he was paying attention to you and he cared and was listening to all those things. And you know, it was everything that you'd wanted to be. And it was amazing. And then, you know, as you sort of move along and you read all these, all the stories and all the accounts and what probably happened and what didn't happen, it's very, I guess, jarring.
I am a Stan Lee fan. I enjoy what he does and I enjoy his specific contribution, you know, to the things that he works. Like I do enjoy, but, you know, that's, you know, I'm a Kirby, acolyte.
Sure.
I'm a Stan Lee fan, but a Kirby acolyte. And, you know, and yeah, like all those things are like, you know, Stan, you know, lights up a room. Like he just, you know, he's got a certain, you know, personal charisma and also like the stories of his last days, are really, you know, your heart goes out to him. Yeah. Like it's super unfortunate
I'm not looking forward to learning the details of that. Cause I think it's,
yes, it's, I mean, there was like an article in AARP magazine and, you know, sort of like every, you know, relative and family friend who had a subscription to AARP was telling me about this article and sending it to me and things. And it's pretty, you know, it's really, rough.
Yeah. no one deserves that.
Ugh, not at all.
It's awful.
Yeah.
So let me ask, like, have you found, are there people that you know in comics who like look at the Kirby book and were like, we had no idea? I mean, there were things in here that I had no idea about. Like every once in a while, they'd be like, oh, and he created, I was just trying to, some, you know, Green Arrow, just like off to the side. You're like, we did
right,
that
yeah.
too. I mean, like, do you find like most comic pros know these stories? Like really?
I mean, I think it varies. I mean, I think, you know, like comic pros are more likely, to know some of these. I don't think the scope of it is commonly known. And to be honest, like I did feel like if like with this book, if all else fails, just the fact that I'm like listing all of these creations, you know, in semi-chronological order is going to like knock people out. Like they're going to be, oh my God, like it just keeps coming. Like you just, you know, just having it all gathered in one place, in one narrative is staggering. Like
you could take any 10-year period out of it at any point and say, these are all the things that he did in these 10 years. And it would be Hall of Fame for anybody.
Yes.
But there's five of those.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, really, really remarkable.
So as you get to the end of this whole thing, you've been working on this Jack Kirby book for years. It comes out are you more in love with Jack Kirby than you had been before?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like immediately when I finished it, I was, just sort of like, a desiccated husk. Like I was, I was just like worn out. And yeah, I didn't know if I'd be able to like look at another Jack Kirby anything ever again, or if I'd be able, if I'd be able to even say the name Jack Kirby. But after like a day or two, it all comes rushing back. It's just like, this is like, okay, think about, what your favorite thing ever is, or your favorite flavor of ice cream, or your favorite, comics creator or movie director or musician or whatever. And then, do something like this, like sit down every day and write and draw a story from their perspective. And basically like in a way, like sort of live their life in sort of an abbreviated, condensed way. And see how you feel at the end of it, So I was wiped out. But yeah, now I'm like, when I was writing these introductions for the Kirby Love and War book and for the Absolute Fourth World volumes, like, I was enraptured, like I was so excited to be able to talk about this stuff and revisit it, with a fine tooth comb.
It's pretty interesting that the publishers of that stuff, now you're the person doing the intro for those kinds of books.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm happy to do it. It's something I've been wanting to do for a while, cause I have so much to say on the subject. It's just, sure. I had to make a book about it, to get these gigs. But yeah, it's just like, I have a lot to say about these works and a certain perspective. And also like, art appreciation or critical writing or whatever, like that was a little bit beyond the scope of this book. Like I had a certain amount of that, but it wasn't, like a dissertation. It wasn't, it wasn't like an artist monograph or something. It was, it was the story of a guy's life, but man, like I really enjoy going deep on the really geeky stuff, like just the minutia of this stuff.
And I I'd seen, just even from looking at your website, you had a bit where you colored some of Jack's pencils directly without inking and did a thing. And I just thought, as you're going through this, there must have been a lot of technical stuff that, as an artist, would have really been interesting. It doesn't really make the book because it's not part of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's tough because I can get so, perseverate, or I can really, get into the most like minutia with this stuff. And like, I'm fascinated by it, but I do have to keep in mind, like, okay, it's not all, comics artists reading this book. I want other people to be able to get something out of it and not, maybe if it had been that comic book form that, ran for thousands of pages, maybe I could have had like a little letters column in the back or something where like I get, into the extra geeky stuff.
That would have just been you and 40 other guys though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, being the comics artist doesn't pay the bills.
No. Although he did okay with it. I was just remembering now that the Ronin Row book was one thing, but at some point in the 2000s, there was a exhibit at the Jewish Museum in New York, and I think that's what it was called. And I saw Kirby pages there, and I'd seen them like on walls at conventions or whatever, but they were set up and you could see them sort of up close. And I think that was one of the first times. And I don't know, we've been doing our podcast for a couple of years, so I was really starting to understand the art form, and that's when everything starts to coalesce. And I love that part of it. Like understanding, I love the moment that it clicks why people talk about this guy the way that they do.
Yeah, when you see the originals, it does tell a very different story. And especially like some of like the work that he's not, that's not as celebrated, like some of the like like some Ant-Man pages or something. Mm-hmm. Like when you see them and they're that like extra large size, you know, like larger than how a comic is drawn today, and you see like just how much is going on there, it's really amazing. And you know, something else that kind of came out of like the Jack Kirby collector was just like when you see his pencils, it's a whole other thing. Like Jack Kirby, it's kind of, you know, he's known as this kind of like, you know, rough and ready kind of style, like big, you know, chunky lines and shapes. But again, like when you see the pencil form, there's a lot of delicacy and beauty and gesture in that form. It's just like, you know, he was part of a production line, so somebody else was going to get their hands on it and you know, turn it into an engraving as opposed to a delicate pencil drawing. But that's how he experienced his stories. That's how they came off his table, was the, you know, one beautiful pencil drawing after another.
So after all of this, if you had a chance to like go have dinner with Jack, what is it you would want to talk to him about?
I mean, again, like the minutiae, the geeky stuff, like I would just listen. I would just let let him talk about whatever he wants to talk about, because, you know, like I'm sure if I let my true fan out, it would probably be very off-putting. Like that is not polite social behavior. Like but people's your guard goes up immediately when something like that. But no, like, okay, super, you know, like super geeky stuff would just be like, okay, tell me everything you can remember about what you were going to do with the New Gods. What was issue 12 going to be? Where were you going with the bugs? What was the story with the bugs? What was going to was Orion going to get the anti-life equation? What was he going to, like, super, super geeky, fanboyish kind of stuff. Like
what was Dave Lincoln's story?
Yes, exactly. Like, they, where those, all of Orion's, acolytes, Harvey Lockman, Dave Lincoln, were they going to eventually like form a church of Orion? Like, are they his apostles or something? Like, what's, you know, like, yeah. So it would be a million like questions like that, that, you know, would be super off-putting for like any creator to get about their creations. But then the thing that maybe wouldn't be as off-putting, but that I am super interested in, is like, let me hear some of these war stories. Like, you know, everybody who's spent time with Kirby said, you know, he'd just, you know, be sort of constantly telling war stories, and they'd be sort of, you know, super engaging. And then Roz would sort of say, hey, these kids don't want to hear about that, you know, cut it out, you know, but like, yeah, I'd love to hear that stuff.
Did you spend time talking to anybody who knew him?
Not for the project. Like, I didn't, hit a bunch of people up for interviews or anything. I have talked to some people like after, you know, just sort of casual talk with like, you know, friends and whatnot, where it's like, oh yeah, I met Jack Kirby and, you know, here's what happened and here's the pictures. And it's a, what, you know, like,
wow.
It's kind of like, you know, started some conversations with, you know, like I've become like a little bit of like a lightning rod for people's, you know, Kirby recollections and stuff. But I'm always like super, I'm all ears,
sure.
You know, if I talk to somebody who met Jack Kirby, like even if it was just for a moment.
You've really transcended from being the guy who draws like Jack Kirby to the guy who speaks for Jack Kirby now in that way.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's kind of like, where else could it have gone? Like this is where it had to go. And in a weird way, it feels like a culmination of it, you know, a project or whatever you want to call it that I've been engaged in my entire adult life. And, you know, it's like, you know, what happens now? Like,
that was what I was about to ask you. So yeah, what's next? What's going on?
I'm figuring it out. Like, here's the thing, like working on this thing, like I said, I like you know, like I enjoy making things up. I like fantasy and pretend and science fiction and things. And when I was working on this book, I was, you know, getting jealous of Jack Kirby because I'm sitting there drawing a picture of Jack Kirby, you know, creating some crazy science fiction concept or something like that. And it's like, wow, that looks like so much fun. I wish I was doing that. I want to, I'd have that thought a lot as I'm, working on this thing. And I kept thinking like, okay, like this is very disciplined work that I'm doing. It's very difficult work, but it's very important work. And it's work I really want to do. It's just, it doesn't come easy.
Sure.
Like the other stuff. But it's like, I got to do this. But when I'm done with this project, I'm going to do make-believe, you know, maybe for the rest of my life, but at least for like, another year or two, like I'm just going to make comics like Jack Kirby, come up with some crazy superhero or some, crazy science fiction concept and do that. So that's basically what I've been doing. I've been, just kind of coming up with different comics and posting them online, putting them on my Patreon, And so like I've been doing stuff, Young Zeus. I've been doing like a lot of like Greek mythology stories, filtered through like a superhero thing. I've been doing just a lot of like superhero stuff, and like really like I've been thinking of it as almost like new golden age comics, where it's like I'm making comics with like that same spirit of the golden age, where it's like, let's just do something stupid, or let's just do something crazy and see where it takes us. Let's figure this thing out one page at a time, and it's been a lot of fun. I just like, I feel like it's going somewhere. Like it's going to coalesce into some larger project or something. But I don't know, when that's going to happen, but it's just like I'm just in this like really fun, creative stage. At some point it'll turn back into a job. It'll stop being, this thing that I love and become like a grind or whatever. But, I'm not there yet. And I'm, to be honest, I'm kind of happy being in this sort of like, blissful, garden of play.
Do you find that, having spent so much time with Jack's work with this kind of stuff, do you feel like that's set up your imagination to be more open, or do you find yourself thinking about, you don't want to compare yourself to Jack all the time, but so there's those things where like when I think of him, we said the story was sad, but really it's this unbridled imagination, this whole thing. So yeah. I mean, does that help you get to sort of the more fun side, that imaginative side of making art?
Yeah, I mean, pretending to be Jack Kirby for all these years, the mask starts to eat into your face. Like if you pretend to be Jack Kirby, you're gonna be more imaginative. You're gonna be more fun and freewheeling and profound, and like you are gonna start to soak up those things. Like it is, if there's something that you want to have a little more of in your work, or some direction you want to work to, like, get into character, like pretend you're that person. And occasionally when I'm stuck, I will I don't really have to think of Kirby anymore because it's just become so much a part of my way of working. It's just, but it's like, yeah, if I get stuck, I will think of like, oh, what would so-and-so do in this situation, or you sort of embody them and you find yourself coming up with, like interesting solutions to things.
Well, sounds like a good place to be.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for talking to me. This was great.
Josh, it was a pleasure.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
And that is another episode of Talksplode in the bag. I want to thank Tom Scholey for speaking with me, and I want to thank the iFanboy patrons for supporting this show and bringing back this show and the Booksplodes and all the other things that happen. If you would like to listen to our Booksplode episode where Connor and I talk about the Jack Kirby bio that Tom did, you can find that on our website at ifanboy.com. You can go find Tom Scholey's Twitter account or his Patreon account. Both of those are linked on the podcast episode here. And thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
They couldn't stop Jack or the water was lapping. And they couldn't prevent Jack from feeling happy.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.